I'm ready to go. I don't know. I'm not waiting for anything.
You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 506 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, future home of the NBA.
Wow. Hello.
Home of the AL West champion, Seattle Mariners.
There we go. And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48. And so we haven't settled on this yet. Super Bowl 60 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
No, we've settled. It was Super Bowl 60. We've all concluded it was Super Bowl 60.
No, about what to do. Should I do both?
Yeah, you can do both. They won two Super Bowls. It's not like we say home of the 2020 WNBA champions with the Storm.
The home of the 1995. When did they win in 97?
Division champion. Yeah, that's a little less notable. We call it, it's the home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm. It's not the home of the 2020 champion.
Home of the two-time Super Bowl winning Seattle Seahawks.
There you go.
We don't know how to change. We don't know how to pivot.
We don't know how to handle success.
We're not used to winning. It was like when I planned out, like, if I ever won a rec sports event, like, how do I act? When I was on my, like, 15-year-long recreational sports losing streak, not for a season, for a game.
How many injuries did you have in those during that rec sports losing streak? Because it was like two injuries and zero wins, correct?
Like severe injuries?
I just remember there was the softball game where your shoulder came out.
Yeah, no, that was probably the only injury.
Okay.
I wish I could tally it up. There was probably something like 30 straight losses that I dealt with though.
I want that information. Let's go back in time. I don't know what sort of tracking the government was doing,
sort of,
but let's put that to positive use.
A co-ed flag football team, but I barely played. Like, I wasn't really on the team that Katie was on. Katie can take credit for those victories. I don't really think I can take credit for the victories.
Did you participate in the game or were you on the team but not at the game?
I think I may have entered into a game at some point. But I probably was like...
Then it had to have been a loss.
A little bit more.
It just goes without saying.
Coaching position on that team.
Like, not all of us can have... Do I have four underdog softball co-ed championships with the Storm?
God.
I believe so.
All you.
Yeah. And two WNBA championship rings, but I did a lot less to earn those, if we're being honest. If we're being honest. Wrote some great stories.
I've got neither, so.
Anyways, as you can tell from the intro, sports are happening in the city of Seattle, the reigning Super Bowl champions. Seattle Mariners opening day is on tap, which means we have your favorite version of your favorite segment coming in later in the pod. But we have to start with the latest updates on NBA expansion. We delayed the podcast to Wednesday because we wanted to record this after the Board of Governors had voted on this latest stage of expansion, which they unanimously voted to explore expansion to Seattle and Las Vegas specifically, and engaged investment bank PJT Partners is a strategic advisor. So Adam Silver said in the press conference after the Board of Governors meeting today, just to make that distinction, we didn't announce today that we're expanding. We're exploring expanding, meaning that there's the economic implications of what the value of that franchise or franchises ultimately determined by the market. Then the league has to make an assessment whether it's then worth it to go forward at those valuations. Some other quotes here relevant to Seattle from the questions he was asked, some of them specifically about Seattle. Chris Daniels and Tim Booth were there from the local market. Referring here to the owners as a whole, I think they care a lot about who their potential partner or partners might be, then particular situations in each market, like what arena would we play in, what are plans, or are people looking at other arenas? All of those are part of the consideration set. This was actually, I guess, not Seattle specific, but potentially relevant. I just want to make sure everybody understands there's been no handshakes on the side, no commitments, no promises to anyone. This is a completely transparent process. Nothing is set in stone right now.
Okay.
So then he was asked with regards to both Seattle and Vegas, there have been reports that multiple ownership groups praying have been in Vegas. I do expect there will be multiple bidders, he said, referring to both locations. And the decision about who gets the team or about Awardian team. I think it has more to do with who comes forward as the potential owner, understanding the arena situation, understanding the economics, because putting aside what somebody's willing to pay for the franchise, we want to make sure they're in a position to be successful, whether that means sharing a building with the hockey team, referring to the Kraken here, whatever arrangement is put forward, although there could be a similar situation in T-Mobile Arena with the Golden Knights. So leading up to this announcement, something that's been in the works for a long period of time, the Kraken announced the official formation of One Roof Sports and Entertainment is an umbrella group overseeing, for now, the Kraken, Coachella Valley Firebirds, and their other operations, but something that an NBA team would very neatly fit into. Mm-hmm. And there was, you'll recall back when I was reporting on expansion with Tim Bontemps and Brian Windhorst in the summer of 2024, Samantha Holloway, the managing owner of the Kraken, had indicated in an email to season ticket holders at the end of the previous Kraken season that this was coming, and then didn't happen then when expansion was also sort of delayed. Now that is officially happening 2 days before this vote. Simultaneously, also the Kraken announced that they have bought part of the equity from Oakview Group in Climate Pledge Arena, becoming the majority shareholders in the arena that they call home.
Okay. That's an interesting distinction also, I guess. Do we want to talk overall about the Sonics or about this particular ownership group?
I think let's start with this ownership group. I mean, we also have Todd Leitwicki's quote to the Seattle Times, now serving as CEO of One Roof Sports and Entertainment after previously holding that same role for the Kraken. We started this journey 8 years ago, intentful to bring the NBA back, and we are going to lean in. The announcements we made earlier in the week were all laying the groundwork, and we're excited. And if we're fortunate enough someday to bring it back and help lead, we'll do it the same way, in the same fashion we've done everything else, fans, community, and with passion for this place we live.
Okay. So, I mean, they're not being secretive about their intent to bid on this team. There is going to be a bid from this ownership group.
They've certainly been signaling it for a long period of time. That is, I would say, signaled in the article that we did write back in September 2024. One of the things that they've been very clear about through this process is we're not going to get ahead of the commissioner. We're not going to get ahead of the commissioner. We're not going to get ahead of the commissioner. The commissioner is ahead now. The commissioner ran out and set the pace. And they are, Adam Silver is a lawyer by trade. He's being very clear to caveat his comments. At one point, he referenced global instability is a possible reason not to expand, factors outside of their control. My colleague Tim Bontemps was in the room. His quote to me talking to him earlier that he wanted me to share with the Pelton cast was that Sonics fans should be jubilant.
Wow! Jubilant!
Jubilant!
That is not the kind of energy that we have on the Pelton cast with regards to expansion.
He said, I get it. You're Charlie Brown with the football.
He said that specifically?
He did that.
Said, wow. Jubilant. Because I was going to say, should we be jubilant? And I thought you were going to say, no, we should not be jubilant.
I mean, I'm a more cautious person. I think we know.
We're aware.
About my emotional management philosophy when it comes
emotional
to
emotional load management.
Not sometimes. I can watch more than 82. I can watch all 82 games, so it's not subject to the 65 game rule. I was thinking
that's funny because you watch no games, as far as I can tell. I've read the comments.
No. The new comments are more positive.
Are they?
Check the Discord. Kevin Durant the other day.
Oh, the Zach Lowe thing.
Kevin Durant the other day passed Michael Jordan for fifth on the NBA's all-time scoring leaderboard, which, number one, I was reflecting on, like, having been there on Halloween night 2007 for his very first points in Denver, which is a very strange place for his career to have started in hindsight, I guess. But a memorable night, one of the few Sonics road games I covered in my career. And it got me thinking about, like, which player have I seen score the most points in person in my life? I mean, it's probably got to be Gary Payton, but like Ray Allen,
no, it's KD. Yeah,
no, it's definitely not KD. Didn't see enough of him. Ray Allen, I saw every Sonics home game he played but one. When we were in Mazatlan for Christmas in 2004, that was the only Sonics home game I missed that Ray Allen played. So he's way up there. I would love to know the answer to that question.
I feel like it probably is Ray Allen more, because Ray Allen scored more points than GP.
in his career?
Even with the Sonics, right? Didn't he average more points per game?
Well, yeah, averaged more. Yeah. But Gary Payton played.
But Gary, you only went to
nearly 1,000 games here.
But you missed some of the beginning, right? Because we didn't have season tickets. Obviously, you went to a few games. And then we were splitting games, tickets.
We were.
Although playoff games, there were a lot more playoff games with GP than Ray Allen.
There were. Yeah. So it's why it's a fascinating question.
I like how this turned to an NBA expansion into who has ESPN senior writer Kevin Pelton seen score the most amount of points?
A very relevant question here.
Okay.
Look, we're all reflecting on it. My buddy Ben Golliver did a piece on his draft Kevin Durant blog. That was his first foray into it. Was his version of Keep GP for me. Yeah. Was draft Kevin Durant. It was a very fun trip down memory lane. I wish I could find
who would have been the other option. He was saying over Craig Oden.
Yeah,
this is from a Blazers perspective.
He was in Portland.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. He was right. You were kind of wrong long term about Keep GP. He was right about that one.
Well, when the trade actually happened, my perspective, and we've talked through that on this podcast before. The spirit of Keep GP was a fine spirit, and the trades that were being talked about at the time would not have been good trades.
Still, wow. Anyway, Durant.com. I love it.
Yeah, I was wondering, there's a somewhere on the supersonics.com archives, I can find no record of this. There was a blog that David Locke and I did where Locke made the case for drafting Oden and for Oden being the best prospect, and I made the case for Durant. So that's my standing on the right side of history.
Well, did you choose sides like, or did you actually disagree with each other about which player to draft?
I think there might have been a very mild disagreement about it. I mean, it's funny because now, like, I have my modern version of my projections. Oden was number one, not Durant.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Hello. Okay. Maybe we come back to expansion here for a second.
We're not going to just deep dive the 2007 NBA draft. So here's where Mike Conley came out relative to Jeff Green.
I've got some bad news for you about what happened right after this.
The fact that all three of those guys are still in the NBA today is a remarkable testament.
Yes, that's kind of incredible. Anyway, so I guess the question is, the owners, this being a unanimous vote, I was going to ask you, is there any significance to that? But ultimately, if basically what this vote is, look, we accept that expansion's a thing. If you're every owner, we accept that expansion could be a thing and that we should go look for offers. Now, realistically, if we're reading between the lines here, it means there's a very high chance of expansion happening. However,
that hence the jubilant.
A unanimous vote. Also, if you're an owner who's on the fence about it, you're like, sure, I will vote yes to go look at offers and then can express my concern about those offers later. Because ultimately, right now, they're not voting on anything, really.
I mean, I'm surprised to the extent that for a period of time, a number of NBA votes were 29-1. And the voter that was on the other side of the 29-1 was someone who is reportedly, been opposing expansion. So from that standpoint, symbolically, it is surprising and notable.
Do we think it's actually more of a because a vote no would have been a vote against momentum, right? People getting their hopes up. Because ultimately, if there's no expansion, this could make the league look badly in these two cities, which is a thing that all the owners are thinking about, and maybe even nationally. So I guess there probably is some significance in it in a vote of pro-momentum toward expansion. And that's where we become jubilant.
I think that's a fair read on it.
Okay.
So Silver did not lay out a timeline. He did, again, reiterate that they want to have this question resolved within 2026. But, you know, whether that means at the upcoming Board of Governors meetings in Las Vegas, an appropriate place to potentially, you know, make this announcement if it's going to be positive in July during Summer League or the fall September Board of Governors meetings prior to the start of the season.
Okay, so we still don't get to celebrate yet.
We're not uncorking champagne, no.
Okay. But we can be jubilant, though. I mean, to me, the Tim Booth comment is...
Bontemps.
Oh, that was Bontemps. I thought that was Tim Booth.
Yeah, no, Bontemps. Okay. This is outside perspective.
Bontemps said Seattle should be jubilant. Did he have any concerns going into this vote?
No, I wouldn't say so.
He thought it was going to be 30-0 also. or at least pass.
Yes.
Okay. Well, another step is down.
Yes.
And what are the remaining steps now? Obviously, finding those bids.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, again, as I noted, Silver said he expects there is going to be multiple bidders. So we don't know what other bidders might be out there in Seattle aside from the Kraken group. But it just, you know, NBA teams don't hit the market that often. There's a lot of people who, there are more people who are interested in owning NBA teams than there are a number of NBA teams. So, you know, the comparison that I sort of used is in when the Celtics came for sale in 2024 after their title. Yeah, that was the right timing, right? There was, you know, sort of an obvious internal group led by Steve Pagliuca that was attempting to buy the team that was ultimately outbid by a group led by Bill Chisholm. So, you know, it's not going to necessarily be that same thing as I mentioned in one of those Silver quotes. They're going to look at sort of what sets up the team for success. And that's where, like, having the NBA, NHL, and Arena all owned by the same group is obviously something that's a clearly successful model that is going to be positive for the NBA, as opposed to coming in as sort of a secondary tenant or potentially trying to build a new arena altogether. That was something that Todd Leiwicki highlighted in his comments, that, you know, we have the track record of owning and operating an NHL franchise, of bringing it from scratch as part of expansion. I mean, it would be a different process with the Sonics because, you know, with the Kraken, you had to establish a brand. In the Sonics case, you're reactivating it, but there's obviously some similar steps. One thing I would note for people, this is like way premature to think about, but people are like, you know, I've seen some like social media posts. They're like, which of the Sonics old logos would you like to see them bring back? Not really the way the NBA does it. They prefer you to, you know, have new stuff so that you can also sell retro merchandise as well. I think there will be a new logo that maybe will retain the feel of a past one, would be my speculation.
It would be colors. Things like that are going to stay the same.
Well, there was a complex history with colors in the 90s, if you'll recall. But yes, I mean, green and gold, I think very likely to be that. But, you know, there's going to be some steps in the process that they'll generate excitement that are similar to what they were able to do with the Kraken. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to take... I think they're certainly the favorites to end up with the team, but I again, it's an NBA team. There's going to be other interest. So anything else that sort of jumps out at you as a question as we come out of this?
Not really. I mean, should there be any other questions? Right now, it's a little bit of a wait and see, I suppose. But realistically, like, if Tim Bontemps is telling us to be jubilant, we can be jubilant at this point.
I understand that not everyone, you know... again, it's gonna, I understand if your perspective is I'm not gonna get there until it's official, until the vote is held. That's the vote that actually says the Seattle Supersonics are an expansion, or the Seattle is an expansion franchise for the NBA. I get that if you're not ready to celebrate until then, but everything is on track.
Okay. It is good news. How about that?
Undoubtedly. It's an important step in the process. It's not the last step, but it's a really important one. All right, with that, let's do some toasts.
All right.
All right, congrats to Sounders defender Antino Lopez, who signed a first-team contract after his game-saving clearance off the line as a fill-in starter on a short-term contract that we talked about on last week's podcast. Lopez was a second-round pick by the Sounders out of Duke in 2024, had played primarily with the Tacoma Defiance since then, making 5 appearances with the Sounders. So a lot of people posted in the wake of that highlight play, oh, the, you know, the look in his of excitement was him knowing he just earned a first-team contract, and lo and behold, he did.
Don't tell it to Laurie Strands. This is like Ken Walker negotiating with John Schneider right before the parade.
Well, speaking
sometimes
of...
it doesn't work out.
No, I think from Ken Walker's perspective,
I guess it did. I guess it did work out.
Speaking of negotiating with John Schneider, congrats to Jackson Smith and Jigba, who signed the largest contract for a non-quarterback in NFL history in terms of average value on a 4-year extension worth up to $169 million in new money, more than $42 million per season, which surpasses the previous $40 million for Ja'Marr Chase that was most for a non-quarterback.
I mean, this is obviously wasn't surprising. It's amazing that the Seahawks got it done, though, that Sean Schneider got it done. Is this their normal schedule for re-signing players? I know Schneider is very particular about his schedule for re-signing players.
So the way they traditionally do it is only in the final year of a player's contract. The loophole that they have used, first with Charles Cross and now with JSN, is that they don't consider the fifth year part of the current contract, the fifth year extension, even though effectively it was part of what they were extending, because when we describe it, we're calling it a four-year extension. That's in addition to the one remaining season on his rookie contract, plus the fifth year option. So in total, he's got 6 years left on his deal through 2031.
Let me just tell you, try to explain that to Jan. Because I did yesterday.
You did? Why would you try to explain that to Jan? What was the upside?
Asking specifics about it. Why would you
just tell her JSN is going to be a Seahawk for many, many years to come?
A fan like Jan is like, he'll be gone immediately. I think A-Rod just scarred people so much. Where just I was just like, I was like, I don't need to explain.
She's not jubilant about the board of governors.
Where I was like, basically, if you want a player back in the NFL, unless they are requesting a trade, you can have that player back. But Jan was not hearing it. So she's
the baseball
jubilant.
Setup
she's
is very
jubilant about the JSN extension, though.
She's jubilant despite the fact that she thinks he's about to leave?
No, she just didn't understand the amount of years or whatever.
I mean, my big takeaway is like, JSN, Julio, you can include Cal Raleigh.
Totally agree.
As well.
Totally agree. This is what my takeaway was going to be also.
Oh, wow. This is terrible podcasting.
They all suck, right?
There was something I was watching.
None of them are as good as Brandon Donovan is what you're getting to at this point.
It was during
right?
the World Baseball Classic. There was a talk about like, ooh, it's been kind of up and down for Julio since he signed that extension or, you know, had that big rookie season and led the Mariners to the playoffs. And it's like, my guy, he was still fifth in the MLB in WAR. He's like finished in WAR. He finished top 10 in MVP voting twice since 2022. Like the expectations for Julio are a little unrealistic, including by you and your extreme confidence that he's going to be dramatically better than Cal Raleigh this season.
Oh, do you not? Literally every single thing that has been written about Julio Rodriguez this year is just like, this is the year. For some reason, everybody...
You don't think that he's going to be hitting 190 on your birthday?
This is nerds. This is everybody. They went into the computers and all things, and they have determined it has spit out Julio Rodriguez. Am I wrong about this? Literally, it was like ESPN led their story about teams who could compete with the Dodgers for the World Series, and it just said Julio Rodriguez.
It didn't actually say that, did it?
No, but it was like he's the number one player on the team.
I just think we should remember that Julio has a tendency to start slowly, and it's fine because it's
we will not
by amazing back halves of the season. Just
we
like,
will not remember that
he might be hitting 195 on your birthday. Okay, it might happen. I mean,
maybe
Cal,
he'll be winning 195 on your birthday.
Cal might be hitting 195 on your birthday. Batting averages are tricky, but Julio's a second half player. He warms up with the weather. And understandably
Julio
so, given the home ballpark. Given the home ballpark in which he plays. They haven't redesigned T-Mobile Park. They haven't moved it farther away from the water in the last 5 months since we last saw Mariners baseball.
Okay, but your point actually was that Seattle athletes, we have done a good job of locking up those players. Like Damon Williams never would have considered leaving.
College is very different, but it does strike me. Is very similar. I mean, it's also funny if you look back at like and think about the players that we were excited, but Ken Griffey Jr., Gary Payton, Sean Kemp taking us through the bulk of the 90s in our childhoods. And it's kind of exciting.
But it's also just like things that we might not have, like Griffey requested a trade, right?
Right.
A-Rod is the only one where like the team did not let him hit free agency or whatever, but like he hit free agency and then signed this massive deal.
Well, if they hadn't called him up and sent down Rich Amerall in July 1994, it never would have happened.
Yeah, changes the course of history. He would have never hit free agency.
Wow, that is we're going to write an alternate history if they don't call up A-Rod in July 1994, everything about the last three decades is different. Might screw up the Seahawks Super Bowls now, so let's not mess with it. Anyways, your children are going to grow up Well, two of your children. Your third, he needs to worry about this AJ Brown trade situation, I guess.
He's not an Eagles fan anymore. He's done.
He stopped being an Eagles fan?
Yeah, he's done with the Eagles.
What happened?
We won the Super Bowl. And I went out of my way. See, people say he was a bandwagon fan, including mostly his brothers, who are mad about him. Those are the only people. But I was like, this is why
I like
fun.
The idea that strangers are just like, oh, that 9-year-old is such a bandwagon fan.
But I was like, to be in the city when you win the Super Bowl, like, we don't get anything, right? When the Eagles win, it's just like, that was a fun day. He wears his jersey. People get a little annoyed with him when he walks around, right? But, like, when you're in the city, everybody is happy. You're in the streets lighting up fireworks. You go to a parade. It's way more fun to be in the city of the team that you're a fan of. Sorry.
Wow. I had not gotten this life update on Fantasy Genius.
He's got a Seahawks Super Bowl shirt. He was wearing it yesterday.
Jan got me a Seahawks Super Bowl shirt. I have not received it physically yet, but...
Oh, yeah, no, that'll be months.
That's probably more my fault than hers.
Literally, she bought the shirts for the children, and then they just didn't arrive, and we just had to rebuy them.
Oh, so, fair enough.
Yeah.
Someday, years in the future, they'll have a second Super Bowl shirt, though.
A lot of Jan talk on episode 506 here.
Did not know it was going to be the Jan episode.
Tell her she should be jubilant.
Here, I thought it was going to be NBA expansion or Mariners opening day. Because with that, it is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
It was a long 5 months. And I'm exhausted. We're exhausted. Some of us lived through historic snowstorms. Some of us through months of gray. The news was mostly bad. Sure, there was a pretty fun run, Italy run in the World Baseball Classic, which we all cared about. It got us through for a while, but nothing, and I mean nothing, compares to MLB opening day. Can you imagine saying that on the Pelton cast a few years ago? And this one means something special, because every once in a while, the sports world can turn in your direction. And Seattle, Washington is so hot right now, even Sauron would be watching. In just 3 months of this calendar year, we will have won a Super Bowl, righted one of the biggest wrongs in sports history, and tomorrow begins the Mariners' first World Series season. Now this year, I'm going to pivot. I'm not going to say they have no holes, because that wouldn't be true. No. They not only have no holes on the major league roster, but waiting in the wings at virtually every position, the Mariners have a star. They not only have no holes on the major league roster, but a farm system with no holes either on the major league roster, where somehow the guy who hit 60 homers last year is not the most hyped player heading into the season. We both boldly predicted this, but I think we can confidently slot in Julio for first in AL MVP voting. A literally perfect outfield with a now healthy Victor Robles, an in mid-season form already Dom Canzone, and contract year Randy. Couple that with who's going to be the newest entrant into the Mariners 50 home run club, taking his pace from spring. It's hard hitting Cole Young. Did you know about this info?
I know that Cole Young had an amazing spring, yes.
On pace for 50 home runs. A full season of base stealing from daddy Josh Naylor, reigning all-star Brendan Donovan, and somewhere Rob Ref Snyder is getting a hit off a left-handed pitcher right now. Meanwhile, I know they're trying to save that sweet, sweet team control. You could call this a bold prediction, but Colt Emerson's debut will be here before the solstice, and he will never look back. All of that, and the reigning MVP of the North. This offense is unstoppable. And I haven't even mentioned pitching yet. A staff that can withstand multiple injuries and still have an ace count that might be up to 7 soon. Because there is an unhittable 20-year-old in Everett and an unstoppable 21-year-old who already has a College World Series MVP under his belt. No holes organization. And finally, a bullpen that is well tested in high leverage situations from the World Baseball Classic. And the Mariners pushed in some chips to find the last piece in another left-handed arm. Carlos Vargas might be the sixth best reliever in the Mariners' bullpen. Think about that. It's actually a dominating bullpen. So it has been well worth the wait as the Mariners were building up the greatest roster in franchise history. The only team in the MLB with a chance to beat the Dodgers. And if we've seen anything from the Seahawks this year or the Sonics at the Board of Governors meeting, 2026 is the year of sports in the city of Seattle, and the Mariners World Series campaign begins now.
I had been thinking the other day, I know jubilant, I think it's premature, but I do think, actually, regardless of what happens with the Mariners, if the Seahawks win the Super Bowl and the Sonics come back in the same year, it would have to be the greatest year in Seattle sports history, right?
Listed here, all-time greatest time periods in Seattle sports life.
Oh, great. Wow, you did the research for me?
This is not part of the hot take. I had to do the research, though.
This is cold, hard facts. How could it be part of the hot take?
1995, 1996. Really, yeah. There's no competition for that time period, right? 95 Mariners, some of the most fun sports moments, like the Sonics championship run that we witnessed, straight up pillars of sports fandom in Seattle, like you mentioned, right? We had Griffey, A-Rod starting, Randy Johnson in his prime, Kemp, Payton, so many more. The Huskies even still a little bit like, you know, the late stage.
So I was looking back at this the other day.
Husky football, but still a relevant team.
When Lou Holtz passed away, I was curious about the UW Notre Dame game that happened the afternoon of game 4 of the ALDS against the Yankees. It was a pretty bad loss. They forgot to cover a receiver on the 2-point conversion that allowed Notre Dame to take the lead. But I viscerally remembered because we watched it at our grandparents' house in the back room. I can remember it distinctly. What I did not remember is that, and I believe this was Damon Heward, they subsequently drove all the way down to like Notre Dame's 23 before throwing a pick six that was returned that made the final margin look much worse than it was. Because when I first looked at the score, I was like, I thought there was a 2-point conversion that was like a huge deal. So anyways.
I have no recollection of this game. 2004, 2005.
Non-conference schedule that year was brutal.
04, 05, obviously, right?
Yep. My first year working with the Sonics and Storm.
All-time favorite Sonics team. Number one, including 95, 96.
2004 WNBA championship, 2005 Northwest Division championship. I was just like, oh yeah, this is going to be like this forever.
Number one seed in Husky basketball.
Yep.
The Seahawks' first Super Bowl appearance in 95. Storm first championship. The Mariners were terrible, but I didn't care.
that was a Mariners season because 2007 was the year they did well, and then 2008 was when they added the lefty where they traded Adam Jones to
Cliff Lee. You're talking about
Eric Bedard. Yeah, because I went to opening day in 2008. I distinctly recall that right before the national championship game, including Greg Oden. All roads lead back to Greg Oden.
Yeah, no, the Mariners were 69 and 93, and their number one player, Richie Sexton. And then, of course, their second best player was worse than Richie Sexton that season. So that says something about his career. Hold on. I got to go back to my notes. Number three, I went, as it's more recent, I went with one specific year.
Okay.
2022. First Mariners playoff appearance I cared about. No, that was number four. 2013 is really just the Seahawks, right? That Seahawks season. Pretty frisky Husky football team.
Yeah.
Sark Husky football team. Last year of Sark. Set the stage for all-time great day that came after that. The Cano and then Chris Peterson day.
The arrival on the scene of a podcast, Seattle Sports Podcast.
Hello. There we go. I mean, that should make it number one right there. Then 2022. First Mariners playoff appearance I cared about since 1997. So that's 25 years of me not caring about Mariners playoff appearances. Husky football is back on the map. This is almost solely for that day when the Mariners played. They lost in the playoffs, but it was still very fun. And then the Huskies beat Stanford in that game. Right, Stanford, right? Huskies come to
You're talking about Arizona that you missed the entire game.
No, yeah, they beat Jed Fish.
Yeah.
In that game. Okay, yeah. That game. Husky football was just back on the map, right? Kalen DeBoer, Michael Penix, Husky football. And like a sort of fun Seahawks season that they made the playoffs after Russ.
Yep.
And number five, I have already 2026.
That's fair. Yeah.
I mean, it's one Super Bowl and the Sonics are returning. So we're jubilant about this. And possibly. The Mariners won the World Series. Literally, this has the chance to be the number one season.
Again, it's not a chance. Like I think it is assured to be if we just get the expansion news. I was prepared to submit the year of the first Seafarer Unlimited Rider Plane Races.
What year is that? 1940 or something?
1951.
Okay.
Unfortunately, UW football went 3-6-1 that season after going, they started the year ranked number 8 in the AP preseason poll and somehow went 3-6-1. So, you know, they were not carrying their end of the,
this is also my sports life. I'm not counting every year. This is just for me personally.
But like, I don't think there can be that good of a time in the 80s. I mean, I guess there was like Seahawks playoff run into Sonics make the conference finals in 87. But I don't know if the Seahawks even made the playoffs in 87 specifically. But the Mariners were obviously terrible for the entire 1980s. Like the Seahawks didn't exist until then. There's really not a lot going on in Seattle sports, you know, until our lifetimes that plausibly makes it the best year. Like, oh, Metropolitans, I guess 1918. I'd have to look at what else was going on in Seattle sports in 1918, but that's up there. We might need more Sounders representation, I would say, on the list, but you know, it's a good list. It's a good list. 1987, Seahawks went 9-7 and lost in the wild card round. Or 9-6 and lost in the wild card round. Was that the strike year? So, yeah. There you go.
Should we talk other Mariners news?
Yes. Mitch Garver won the backup catcher job.
I like it.
Not particularly surprising. His contract now guarantees. Andrew Kinzer elected free agency rather than go to AAA. J.P. Crawford, Bryce Miller, Miles Mastroboni, Italian hero Miles Mastroboni, starting the season on the injured list. But seems like positive progress from Bryce Miller as he works back from this injury.
Emerson Hancock going to start as fifth ace.
Yes.
As they call it.
That's the official spot. Mm-hmm. They're not rotation spots, they're ace spots. Cole Emerson was sent down, as you alluded to in the hot takes.
It's fine. It is fine that Cole Emerson was sent down, but like he will return. I mean, right now, realistically speaking.
Just like the prodigal son, he'll return.
Day one, he's probably going to be a better player than Leo Rivas or Ryan Bliss.
I am somewhat less convinced of that, but especially like the benefit of having him go through the major league adjustment that is inevitably going to happen is that like then he keeps playing and is good. But if you bring him up now and he goes through the adjustment and then J.P. Crawford comes back, you don't get that benefit. So I think it makes sense from that standpoint. So they host Cleveland for the second consecutive year in a 4-game series to start the season. And the listener invited me to attend opening day.
Wait,
so
really?
I will be there. Yes.
But not me?
Yes.
Just you?
Just me.
Wow. Because you named the podcast after yourself?
It is. That's why, yes. The listener said that. If only it were the Fabulous Carcino cast, I would have invited Tristan.
Hmm.
I was right there in the text.
Notes are being taken. Hold on, I need to get my notepad out. I can't even go anyway.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Baseball practice?
Yeah, it's the first day of BMX racing. And
oh,
so
nice.
Two baseball practices and BMX racing. But I am jotting it down.
Two opening days. What is the... Oh, it's Ryan from The Office who's the meme of the note-taking that you're doing, yes?
There we go. Mm-hmm.
Anything else in the Mariners? I mean, I'm excited to watch them play baseball. You know,
me too, to play baseball. I mean, whatever they want to do, I guess, you know.
They just like run around out there. No, that wouldn't be as exciting. I mean,
I'm excited to eat from a ferry.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely play. I assume the ferry demand tomorrow night is going to be off the charts.
Jubilant.
Is this the Jubilant Pod?
I don't know.
It is a Jubilee year, you know, so maybe it is appropriate to be jubilant. I hadn't thought about that. That's a almost Hoop Collective-esque slice of Catholicism in here. Yeah, it'll be very similar, I think, to when everyone was trying to get the ham swiggerty sandwich back at opening day 2023, which was the last opening day that I attended, and obviously the year of the famous No Holes proclamation, followed by
this
Tommy
is
LaStella.
The team actually has no holes, if we're being honest with ourselves.
I mean, could some holes potentially develop, but it's a reasonable thing to say about them at the start of the season. The Brandon Donovan trade meant that there are no glaring holes on the major league roster as they start the season. I guess the one thing I just want to say is, like, baseball's really hard and the playoffs are super random. So the Mariners could be really good and not make or win the World Series. And they should definitely not, that should not be the bar on what a successful season is on a variety of levels. Like, you have to, as our friend Mike Cameron once told us, enjoy the enjoyment of the regular season without everything being focused on the prism of, are they going to win the World Series or make the World Series?
I mean, I'll go way further. I only care about the regular season. No, it's like the regular season.
That's the listener Noah Cohen, third Feldman brother Noah Cohen. But yeah, I mean, the beauty of baseball is in the fact that it is there for you every day, whether you have two baseball practices in BMX opening day or not. Baseball is just going to be there, comfortably waiting for you.
No, the regular season is the most fun. The first couple weeks of baseball, when you care about everything the most, and granted, I think we care about everything the most all year long somehow, but like the first couple of weeks when every single game matters so much is the most fun.
Yep. So.
I can't freaking wait. It's baseball is fun to have on all the time, but it's the most.
Are you going to throw on the Netflix game tonight?
Probably. I don't see why I wouldn't. Also, what is the update on TV broadcast for? This is the kind of info I need here.
The Mariners are going to be on Xfinity. I believe it is channel 1261.
Hello.
Which weirdly is distinctive enough that I remembered it.
I mean, you hit me 637 right there, you know?
Yeah,
you know what that is.
1261 on Comcast Xfinity.
So is
414
like,
for Charter Spectrum subscribers.
Will that look like the same as, do I have this channel?
You will now. If you had Root Sports previously, you will now have this channel.
Okay. Is it going to look the same as the Mariners broadcast as before?
No, because it's going to be handled centrally by MLB. So I don't think it'll look exactly the same as the spring training broadcast, but more in that vein.
Aaron Goldsmith, though?
Of course.
Rick Riz? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The gang will all be there.
Okay. Phew.
You just got to go to a different channel to find them. 1260.
It actually is funny. Dave Valley, as like an Italian catcher, he's like, I'm just like, oh God, Dave Valley. I don't know what my pick is of the color guys.
I look, you know, I love everybody in their own way.
Okay. All right.
Baseball. All right. Let's get into the roundup. The Seattle Kraken. We've now lost four in a row. Did get a point Tuesday in a shootout loss at Florida. Still three games remaining on the East Coast swing that wraps up on the way home in Edmonton. They're now 5 points out of a playoff spot, albeit with a game in hand. So the Kraken playoff, you vowed to watch every Kraken game.
Did not watch a second.
Not the most lasting. I sadly, despite the Kraken hat, did not catch any of them either. The Kraken playoff push going to need a little more push to get going. Better news for the Seattle Sounders, who got a win they didn't need last Wednesday in their first game, their only game, in Spokane to advance in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. The Vancouver Whitecaps scored first in the 24th minute to make things interesting, reducing the Sounders' aggregate advantage to 3-1. But Seattle answered with two goals 4 minutes apart in the second half. Deni Misovski scored in the 79th, followed by primetime Pauly Rothrock in the 83rd, both assisted by Tacoma Defiance call-up Peter Kingston, a Kirkland native who played for both Seattle U and UW, as well as Ballard FC, before joining the Defiance last year. This might be the most Seattle person that if we're continuing our search, someone who has played for all of those teams in the Seattle area. So we did it with Antonio Lopez. Let's get Peter Kingston a first team Sounders contract as well. They advance to face Tigres in the CONCACAF Champions Cup quarterfinals and will host the second leg on April 15th back at Lumen Field after the grass process is completed there. The first leg of that matchup coming April 8th in Nuevo León. Tigres beat Cincinnati 5-1 at home to come back after losing away 3-0 in the first leg. They lost on penalties in the final of the Liga MX Apertura last December. Completing a very busy stretch that included these two CONCACAF Champions Cup matches, the Sounders earned a point with a pretty drab scoreless draw Sunday at Minnesota United, during which the teams combined for just 4 shots on goal. Good news and bad news on the injury front. Alex Rodan had to leave in the 22nd minute, but Jordan Morris made his return to play the final 25 minutes. So nice to see him getting back into the lineup. Now a well-deserved break for the Sounders with the international break, which is highlighted by Italy hosting Northern Ireland on Thursday in the World Cup qualifying semifinal to determine whether they will be playing in Seattle in June during the World Cup. I know you are not paying attention since you didn't reply to that.
I literally was like, earlier I had like some work to do and I was like, I'll get it done during the roundup. You said Italy is playing to determine whether they're playing in Seattle.
Well, it's the semifinal. They need 2 wins, one of which will have to be away. But on Thursday, hosting Northern Ireland in the semifinals.
That's on Thursday? Okay. I mean, I was paying attention to these games, to their existence.
Thursday, 12:45 p.m. Pacific.
All right, I'll turn that on. Channel 1261.
This one will be, I believe, on ESPN. I actually don't know what those games are on. But hopefully ESPN Plus, that would be ideal.
Just as long as there are a bunch of ads about a Gonzaga documentary on Tubi during it, I'm good. That's all I ask.
This is where you decided to add the Gonzaga Tubi documentary bit? I mean, I knew it was coming at some point, but I figured it might be.
Were you expecting
in that? The college basketball section. All right, Seattle Reign FC, despite playing against 10 players after Portland's Cassandro Baguer picked up 2 yellows in the first 9 minutes of action, the Seattle Reign conceded twice in the first half and couldn't find the back of the net. Even after the Thorns were reduced to 9 by a red card for Reyna Reyes in the 57th minute, Seattle managed just 4 shots on goal out of 17 total. I saw that they set a record, possibly a team record, for crosses in this match in a 2-0 Derby loss at Portland on Friday. They are now headed to Spokane for their section of the schedule. Well, again, the turf grass continues to be installed at Lumen Field. Wednesday night, mere hours after we record this, they'll host the Kansas City Current, then Sunday versus Racing Louisville. It did seem like it was a kind of a cool atmosphere for the Sounders. I've walked past that ballpark, that stadium, a bunch last year when I was in town for the NCAA tournament this time of year. And very cool for the Sounders fans east of the mountains and in Spokane, particularly, to go get to see the team play and now see the Reign play these 3 games that they will be playing in Spokane.
I like that. I got to say, Chris was complaining to me. He's a Sounders season ticket holder, so obviously this means less matches for him to go to. And this was back in the fall, and I was like, first off, I don't care at all. Second off, I am always a fan of teams playing in strange environments.
I mean, for the players' sake, I do think it's generally positive to keep the one home city. But, you know, because it sort of becomes part of the road trip for the Sounders, is they've got this 5-game MLS road trip sandwiched around it. But I love spreading the things out for the Sounders fans all over the country or over the state. Not all over the country. That would be too much.
All over the country of Washington.
Wouldn't say Washington. But yeah, there we go. All right, Seattle Storm. The WNBA CBA has been ratified. Here comes the off season.
Hello.
We're jumping right into it, starting with the expansion draft. The WNBA announced hours ago will be held April 3rd, ahead of the national semifinals in the women's NCAA tournament. So a very compact schedule leading up to the WNBA draft on April 13th, where the Storm will be drafting 3rd. Free agency also coming up in there.
Is there anything we should be looking at that specifically from the Storm perspective in the expansion draft, or is it too rushed even?
I wrote about it back in the fall. I you know, recommend everybody check that out.
Okay, great.
UW women's basketball, speaking of the NCAA tournament, their first NCAA tournament, I guess we probably should have just put this in the notes. I don't know why you didn't, but throw this on the list of 2026. The first NCAA tournament win for the UW women since 2017 as they blew out number 11 seed South Dakota State after a very sluggish start to that one last Friday. We're down 13-3 to start the game, and then picked up two fouls on Jackrabbit star Brooklyn Meyer, and everything sort of clicked from that standpoint. Avery Howell, with the game of her life thus far, a career high, I believe it was 38 points that she made in that, scored in that one. Just a truly terrific performance. And, you know, we have not had an NCAA tournament win for either the UW men or the women since 2019. So this is like, for many of your children, this would be the first time they remember UW basketball winning a game in the NCAA tournament, which is pretty funny.
I mean, even being in the position to win that game, I think was probably the biggest part of it, you know, to be seen favored in a place where they were playing against South Dakota State, and to, I mean, comfortably win overall, right?
30 points for Avery Howell, 9 of 16 from the field, 7 of 13 from three, added 9 rebounds in this one. Xavier Sellers with 10 assists. It was just a very comfortable victory of the kind you'd like to see playing a mid-major, even though, you know, South Dakota State, as we talked about, had come up with upsets two of the previous 3 years in the first round of the NCAA tournament. So that set up a matchup Sunday night against number 3 seed TCU, bringing a 42-game winning streak into that one at home. And the Huskies led much of the way in this one. How much of this did you watch?
I watched like the fourth quarter.
Okay. I had the weird experience. The second consecutive time a winner-take-all game for a Seattle sports team in the postseason, a Seattle women's basketball team, I should say, in the postseason, or have been going to a concert that night. I really did not think that my 9:15 concert was going to butt up against UW women's basketball playing in Fort Worth, Texas at 9
p.m. It's like you have to be doing everything all the time.
I did manage to stream it, the late stages and overtime in this one.
You're not St. Augustine over here.
What I'm not is Detlef Schrempf.
They weren't playing that record.
But they did play Detlef Schrempf.
Everything all the time?
It was, yes. But they did play Detlef Schrempf as the encore.
All right.
So.
Honestly, I got to say, pretty good record, if we're being honest.
Yeah. Goes hard. Any takeaways from kind of the late stages of this one?
That TCU crowd is just ridiculous. Like, how do we get that? How does that happen here? Why does TCU care so much about women's basketball, women's college basketball?
I mean, I think, you know, it's the fact that they didn't a few years ago, I think I would say, before Mark Campbell got there, and they built that up really quickly. And hopefully that's the sort of thing that we're in the process of doing here in Seattle. And part of the way you do it is to host NCAA tournament games. Like, you know, to make that a key part of your season, which the Huskies did in 2017 during Kelsey Plum's senior season, but not at any point. There was a long stretch of time where before they went back to this model, they had 8 home sites like the men's NCAA tournament, but they did them on college campuses. So UW, I guess actually they did 16. UW for several years hosted the NCAA tournament. And for a bunch of those years, Gonzaga was like the de facto home team in it because UW was never good enough. You would host no matter what your seed were if you made the NCAA tournament, and UW didn't host in any of those years. So, but a really impressive performance, I think, particularly defensively against a TCU team that has a lot of firepower. You know, you're looking at multiple WNBA draft picks this season in that starting five, including Olivia Miles. And the Huskies held them to 6 points in the second quarter, 19 points in the first half. Ultimately, I think, had a difficult time generating enough offense down the stretch, which is not surprising. This TCU defense we talked about, just outstanding at the rim.
Olivia Miles passing too. I mean, it was fun. I hadn't watched Olivia Miles before this, really. And seeing her play is She's just an exciting player to watch. And kind
she
of
had a triple-double in their opening round win.
What she can do is, like, it's interesting to see a player who moves at a different speed as everybody else, you know, on the court. And she really does. Like, passes at a different level than basically anybody in the court. And just kind of floats sometimes. It was pretty fun to watch overall. And it was one of those games, like, when it went to overtime, I was just like, game's over.
You did kind of have that sense. Despite the fact that it was the Huskies who scored the last bucket eventually to tie it up, Bryn McGoy getting a score in the paint with 14 seconds left after TCU had gone ahead. I think this was for the first time in the second half, right? Or no, they were up. No, yeah, they tied it at 232, took their first lead at 139 on Clara Silva layup off a Miles feed. But Huskies still around the entire way, even after they very quickly went down. After they went down as many as five in overtime, no, seven. Yeah, they very quickly went down seven with 3:22 left in overtime. Have a three-pointer in the closing seconds from Xavier Sellers that could have tied it and forced a second overtime. So
they fought back pretty hard. Like they fought back better than I was expecting in this one. I definitely felt like when they went down, because they went down as many as eight, right?
I think it was seven.
And when they were, I was like, oh, the game's over for sure. Right. But they did hit a couple of shots where I was like, it was a valiant effort in a really hard place. Honestly, in the women's NCAA tournament, you just have to be one of those teams that's hosting.
Yeah, we saw, you know, how many Notre Dame pulled the upset? Who else pulled the upset in the second weekend? Kentucky, and then Virginia is a 10 seed. The first 10 double-digit seed to advance in the NCAA tournament on the women's side since 2022. And I don't think any of the men's double-digit seeds advanced this year, did they?
Texas.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah. the slipper still fits.
There you could have thrown it in.
I had to wait.
So the Huskies say farewell to a senior class led by Elodie and Hannah Steins, who were four-year starters, key parts of their upset over Stanford, who I think was number two at the time in 2023, a game that I had to leave because how long ago was this? I had to leave it because Kyrie Irving was getting traded to the Dallas Mavericks during the middle of that game. Also Tegan Brown and Shayla Gilmer in reserve roles, all part of that first recruiting class for Tina Langley that has turned around this UW women's program and gotten them back to the NCAA tournament the last 2 years. And then Yulia Grabowskaya played a key role in this season as a transfer from Michigan in her 1 year at UW. So they are losing a lot of depth, two starters, three of, you know, their top six players. One of the things I thought was interesting was Devin Coppinger, how much she played in the NCAA tournament. 32 minutes against TCU, had some nice offensive contributions in the opening round against South Dakota State. There was sort of some found money, so possibly someone who can step up into a larger role next year. They welcome some strong recruits, but the most important thing is, and, you know, obviously nothing is guaranteed with the transfer portal, but, you know, the Huskies were the only, I believe, power conference team in the country not to lose a player to transfer last offseason. And Avery Howell, Xavier Sellers, Bryn McGoy, with Elodine dealing with injuries this season, established themselves as UW's three top players. They should all be back as the core of the next team. And a UW team that I think has a chance to, you know, should extend this NCAA tournament streak again, assuming that things go as you'd expect over the next few weeks here when the transfer portal does open. So kudos to Tina Langley and credit to Elodine, Hannah Steins in particular in that senior class on great careers. Our UW softball swept Michigan with all three wins by three runs or fewer, then beat Loyola Chicago 7-0 on Tuesday and have now won 17 games in a row, a stretch of more than a month without a loss. They're up to number 16 in the ESPN college softball rankings. Stay in the Midwest this weekend to face Iowa, which is 5-4 in Big Ten play. All right, let's wrap up with one more bit of Seahawks news from the wide receiver position. In addition, not JSN, not the only Seahawks wide receiver getting a new contract. Seahawks will be having more Bobo as they opted to match the two-year $5.5 million offer from Jacksonville to restricted free agent Jake Bobo that came out not long after we recorded our podcast last week. I mean, I felt like there was some question about this because obviously if you let somebody sign an
offer
sheet.
I was a little surprised that they matched it, to be honest.
I mean, people have highlighted they spent a lot of money at wide receiver, you know, new contract for Rashid Shaheed this offseason, the extension for JSN. They've still got Cooper Kupp under contract. Torrey Horton hopefully going to be helping next year, and now Bobo. But I mean, I think one thing to remember, you know, when you actually saw the terms of the offer sheet, like his cap hit this year is going to be lower than it would have been had he played it out on the restricted tender that the Seahawks had offered him. So from that standpoint, it would have been kind of strange if they didn't match it. It can match okay. It is more guaranteed money for Jake Bobo, which explains why he signed it, because it goes beyond this season. But I think a win-win for both sides here.
Okay, great. I mean, I'm happy to have Bobo back. When I'd seen that he signed the agreement with Jacksonville, I was a little sad.
Oh, understandably. We've enjoyed watching Jake Bobo. I guess you didn't enjoy watching him at UCLA against UW, but
still haunts me. Still haunted.
All the way back to the third best Seattle sports year. I can't remember where that ranked.
Hold on.
You don't know this off the top of your head?
Well, third, whether it was third or fourth.
Yeah.
That was fourth. Fourth best.
Okay. Well, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Was that like an obscenely fast podcast?
I don't think it was obscenely fast. No, I guess it was an hour flat.
There we go.
We used to do them like that back in the day.
There's just like kind of, I don't know, not that much to talk about with regards to expansion.
It is a little more straightforward, perhaps, than the importance level would suggest.
Just jubilant.
We're jubilant.
Okay, so Luka was in Arizona.
Where it was over triple digits, right? They were moving Major League Baseball spring training games to the evening because of the heat.
Oh, yeah, and they had the children right in the middle of the day.
You got it. I mean, it's
not
okay.
Actually. He played at like 8 a.m. every day.
Oh, yeah.
They do stuff really early or really late. They were like, no one cares about the children, right? And they're like, no, absolutely not.
I mean, the one thing is, I feel like this is a very, I'm getting myself into potential science trouble on the Discord here. I feel, do you get less, more dehydrated as you get older? Like, you need to drink water a lot more as you get older, it feels like.
I'm not sure if that's scientific.
But that's how I feel.
Kevin Pelton's a thirsty guy.
Wait, anyways,
I have to see the memes. Hold on.
The Dune font memes?
Yeah, no, that was really good. So, wait, what did you ask? How did it go? Oh, yeah. Okay, so they're in Arizona. And Luka's playing against Kevin Youkilis' kids' team. Kevin Youkilis is the coach of the team.
The Greek god of walks from Moneyball.
And I was like, you have to heckle Kevin Youkilis in this game, right, to Luka. And he had no interest in that at all. But I knew that he was going to become friends with Kevin, because he talks so much on the baseball field. Like, he will befriend every single person. And he's
a Moneyball reference. Too. This is like Scott Hatterberg.
Oh, he's Scott Hatterberg?
Yeah, because Scott Hatterberg in the book famously says he enjoyed moving to first base because it was a great chance for him to talk to players when they came through.
He
referred to them as
position.
Being, quote, in his office.
In his office. Wait, did you hear that, babe? She didn't hear that. I have to tell Luke about that. That's really funny that it all comes back to Moneyball. But he didn't know it was Kevin Youkilis there. He just thought it was the coach of the team or whatever. And of course they became friends. And he hit a double.
Define became friends.
Well, you know, like they just chatted a bunch.
Yeah.
We're talking about Kevin Youkilis. Scott Hatterberg in Moneyball also went to Wazoo. This is a difference between you and him. You would not do that. And Chris Pratt could not play you in a movie. But we wouldn't allow it. But I guess at first base, he said that he liked moving to first base, even though I remember he couldn't play it very well, because he liked chatting with people. He said that the people were in his office when they're at first. You talked to Kevin Youkilis the whole time? He hit a double off Kevin Youkilis' kid. And then Kevin Youkilis said, What did he say to you? He told me you hit tanks, bro. You hit
tanks, bro. Wow. Love it.
Yeah. You hit tanks,
that is
bro.
Amazing. It looked good on Instagram, the double.
He got a hold of that one. So anyway.
Better than
that's
the home
sad
run, actually. It was like an inside the park home run, right?
Al's over here insulting your home run.
I'm not insulting your home run. I just thought the double was more impressive.
He thought the double was more. We all agree the double was more impressive.
Yeah.
What was it? 83 off the bat?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big number.
It's the best position for a person who wants to talk the entire time, first base.
Yeah. I agree.
That's all you do. Yeah, I know. But you talk to people at second, third, too? Oh, when you're on the bases. But no, so I got a text after on Sunday. I wasn't there, right? On Sunday, he finishes up one game and then it pitched that entire game mostly. And then I get a text in between the games that say Luca and Trev have been ejected.
Yes.
And I was like, what the hell did he do? I was like, what kind of scene did he cause? And I freaked out. There was also like a miscommunication about
he was eliminated for the rest of the tournament.
No, I think parents thought he was like talking shit about one of the like teams earlier, but he wasn't. And so there's like a miscommunication about that. So I thought he was actually like ejected for like behavior in the game. Well, I thought they ejected you and then your coach got mad at them and then also got ejected.
Wow.
Which is what any good coach should do. If you're not standing up for your guys, you're not doing anything. But it turned out that he had like thrown an inning over his pitch limit or whatever for the turn. It's out. It's an out over.
Because the rules were different than the coaches were used to, or just they lost count.
I don't know. Well, it's like every out you record counts as an inning played. So he pitched seven total innings.
Because he'd pitched, come on for a third in relief.
No, he pitched like all the time in relief. Like every time he came in was because somebody got injured.
And so they were counting number of like innings, including a third.
It's innings appeared
specified
in, but not outs gotten, right?
Gotcha.
So, which does kind of make sense because then you could just constantly be bringing people in, giving up like zero. Like, I don't know why you would do this, but like have them come in, hit somebody or something, and then pull them and it would count as nothing.
Yeah, I definitely don't know why you would do that. That
if you don't record an out, it doesn't like it would still count as an inning pitched.
I think it's more if you were going like in the fireman situation and it was like every time you got in a jam, you would bring your best pitcher in as a reliever to get that specific out or two and then save, you know, the rest of the.
So what did you actually pitch? Six and two thirds. But it was over seven innings.
Gotcha.
Because he appeared in over seven innings and then was ejected for the last game that they played.
Wow. Were
it was
you
the
allowed
best game
to...
of your life? He was still able to talk the entire time, though.
Were you allowed to be in the dugout, or did you have to sit in the stands?
They did allow him to be in the dugout. Also, okay. He got to warm up the left fielder left-handed, too.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. What excitement.
So being able to throw left-handed was like... What? I have to alert the people that you throw heat lefty.
He throws
heat lefty.
If Kevin Youkilis telling you you hit tanks is the ultimate compliment, who would be the best compliment about you throwing with your offhand? I guess the answer is
Tarantula's
AJ. Yeah. Or Pat Venditti, was that the name of the previous switch pitcher?
You're actually kind of more ambidextrous, I will say. You can like bat left-handed comfortably.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe that's where Luca gets it from, because I can't do anything left-handed.
I don't think that's how it works.
You don't think so?
No.
You don't think left-handed ability is genetic?
We definitely don't think it comes from the uncle. I don't think people are famously like, oh yeah, you inherit that from your uncle.
Yeah, the left-handed throwing ability from your uncle?
Well, I do think it's possible because I'm left-footed, as you know. I do think it's possible like I was actually left-handed but just got taught right-handed at some point. That's probably not the case, but I'm probably more ambidextrous than you. Because of something related to that.
I can't do anything left-handed. Luca can do everything. He can write left-handed.
Yeah. Cool.
He can't bat left-handed, though.
It didn't. Let me tell you, I broke my right thumb last summer. Didn't help me a single little bit. Nope. Definitely can't operate chopsticks left-handed.
We also argued, I feel like he should get 7 innings in a tournament like this each hand.
I agree.
Thank you. We're going to petition.
I mean, the issue is stress on your arm. So if you're pitching with different arms, it
totally
is,
agree.
You know, less stress. So.
We call him left-handed. He's Luca with 2 L's.
Wait, so I haven't actually seen the Cal Raleigh Larry Hernandez commercial, but is it along the lines of this?
I guess so.
Luca gets an extra spot in the order and additional innings if he does it with the other hand. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm glad the tournament was a success despite the ejection.
Despite the ejection? It is like kind of fun to say that you were ejected also.
Like the year where I was the only person in the YMCA basketball league to, or the Boys and Girls Club basketball league to get a technical foul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I sadly was not the only person to get a technical foul. Or no, maybe I was. I just got multiple technical fouls.
Probably the only one to do that. On that note,
we went on the ferry also. We went on the Vashon ferry. If you walk on, $7.
You came to the Vashon ferry.
Mm-hmm.
Literally within walking distance of my house. And you didn't tell me about it?
I don't know. I thought maybe you were doing things.
I mean, probably I was, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't inform me of when you're going to the Vashon ferry.
Oh, you're going to Mariners opening day and I'm not informed about it?
I informed you on the podcast.
I guess you did inform me.
I didn't think about saying something about it beforehand, but it was funnier to do it on the pod. I mean, I didn't find out several days ago. I found out a couple hours ago.
Was the request, don't tell Tristan?
No. That was not part of the request.
Sorry.
The listener doesn't think about you at all.
I somehow win the MVP, but, you know. Fair enough.
Did you have more Vashon ferry takes?
Riding on a ferry is great.
Yeah, that's why people want to eat out of one.
It's true. It was sunny, though. Like, it got sunny during the ferry ride. It was basically, the activity was riding the ferry. The thing about walking onto the ferry is when you get to the other side, you don't have a car.
Yeah.
But and I will tell you, Vashon's just like one hill straight up once you get there, more than you remember.
I mean,
because most of the time you're there, you're in a car.
Exactly. I know. I remember it from the time I was there, that how straight uphill it is. I mean, if you're visiting Lindy West, you take the ferry, you walk onto the ferry, and then you get a Lyft or Uber from the ferry to wherever you're going. You don't understand this reference, but it was very big on the Discord.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
There was a feature about visiting Lindy West and a lot of Peltoncast geography about the location of Lindy West's home and the description of how to get there. So, Blue Sky with Norm Charlatan.
Okay. We ended up just kind of like walking around Vashon for a little bit and then ended up at a beach. I mean, the beach that's right next to the dock. And then I was like, we had to walk through people's yards to get to the beach. It was kind of complicated. And then there were some people down there and I was like, can we get back to the ferry from here? And they were like, legally or illegally? And I'm like, however it needs to be done. They were like, you could just walk over there. I think it's basically like it's a private beach, but I don't believe you can own beaches, people.
If somebody would
have stopped me, I would have said, I don't believe you can own beaches.
Oh, I have not been yelled at, but Grace was yelled at for straying a little bit too far because near us, there's a couple of street ends. And at one of them, there's legal access to the beach within like this 10-foot strip that is the width of the street. Because that is not owned, but the property on either side of it is owned. And she got yelled at by a person living next to this for being like 5 feet too far over to the left on a piece of driftwood.
For being like, they were like, that's a private beach, bro?
Basically.
Fuck that! No, see, I would have yelled back. I was actually so prepared. I was almost wanting somebody to yell at me for being on a private beach.
I think people are chill with it because there are many people who walk their dogs on the beach, etc., things like that around here.
I do feel like the Vashon energy is not yelling at you when you're on the beach, but
It's not, no, that's not the most Vachon energy I've ever heard.
But I was so ready to argue with them about being able to own the beach, because I don't agree with that. Yeah. But the ferry ride is great. It was like 15 out of 10.
It was a ferry ride. We were going to Bainbridge. But going through Vachon, on which my wife's spot, was looking at houses over here, and then went to, Zillow or Redfin or whatever, and found that the house that we live in was for sale.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go.
There you go. The only thing we could talk about while being on the ferry was how great it was being on the ferry, though.
It was too exciting a topic of conversation. You couldn't get through to anything else.
I literally took so many videos. I have like 50 selfies. It's basically just the concept of being on a ferry was like, we were like, what can we discuss? Not puzzles. It's being on a ferry and how great it is being on a ferry when it's sunny.
Exactly. When you're on this ferry, it's not sunny, not nearly as fun.
Maybe. I don't know. I think
I've never been
like
on the ferry when it's not sunny.
I think I had a good time.
Okay. I was on a ferry during a pretty stormy day right before Christmas. It wasn't the most fun experience.
We were on Alki. Relative
to ferry when it's sunny.
We were walking on Alki, and Mateo was like, we at the farmer's market. It was a very nice Sunday in West Seattle. But Mateo was like,
I guess I was not at the farmer's market, but we were not far from Alki last Sunday. So
Mateo was like, thanks for the heads when can we go on to a ferry? And I was like, I guess we could go right now. And Marco definitely thought that fucker was flipping. He was like, have you told mom that we're going on this? And I'm like, Marco, it's a ferry ride. It's like 30 minutes. I was like, is it the concept of spontaneity that is bothering you, or are you terrified? And he was like, we did just do a lesson on the Titanic. And I'm like,
okay,
it's not going over. I promise you, there are no icebergs here and Vachon.
No icebergs. No holes, no icebergs.
But they're delicious to eat out of.
On that note.
All right. Bye.